Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The very first day of the 2019 Iowa legislative session. With me is Iowa State House reporter Katarina Sestarek at the State House Law Library. In our first half hour, we talked with Republican leaders. Republicans, after the November elections, maintain their majorities in both the House and the Senate. Also, a full four-year term for Governor Kim Reynolds. This half hour, we have the Democrats. Representative Todd Pritchard joins us, a Democrat from Charles City, House Minority Leader. Also, Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat from Des Moines, the Senate Minority Leader. Welcome to our lawmakers. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Katarina, we talked about gun rights. That was in the news this weekend. I think you wanted to follow up with our Democrats here to ask them about that.
Yes. So Republicans say they're disappointed because the Republican Secretary of State has failed to notify the public about some potential constitutional amendments, one related to gun rights. So they're pretty convinced that this sets the process back. They'll have to have the amendment pass two general assemblies again and then have it go to the voters. Now it's looking like it won't be until 2022. First, I'm curious, what's your reaction to that issue?
Well, it was surprising news to hear, and I do believe they're right. This will set them back. We need to follow the law, and they'll have to consider how to move forward and if they have the support to do so.
And the Republican leaders we had on in the first half of the show said that, maybe there's an issue with the fact that the Secretary of State, that process has to go through him, and he even kind of has the ability for the process to stop with him. They suggested that maybe the process for adding constitutional amendments should be changed. What do you think of that?
I'm not one for throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, if this obviously comes as a surprise to, I think, all of us that, you know, this is kind of a technicality, I guess. But to kind of wholesale say we've got to relook at this whole system, I think is kind of a knee-jerk reaction. It's too soon to do anything like that. You know, and speaking generally about the gun issue, I mean, one thing I think that needs to be clear in this discussion is that the amendment that they are proposing, it goes far beyond the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment. I think you could find a lot of bipartisan support. I mean, Democrats have already taken a vote on that last year, or, you know, last time this came up in the last session. And this isn't that. I mean, this is a measure that would endanger things like background checks and what I think people would consider very common sense issues. So there's a bigger picture here that I think is important in a narrative that needs to be discussed. I mean, this isn't, as I like to say, this isn't your dad's Second Amendment proposal that they're trying to pass here.
In the first half hour, we got to about a half dozen of the GOP's agenda items for this session. Todd Pritchard and Janet Peterson, I'm sure you've been well acquainted with what the Republicans in the majority in both the House and Senate have as far as their priorities. What's your reaction to that? Give us a sense, perhaps Senator Peterson, start off of what you will be doing as a minority party since you do not set the agenda.
Well, that's right. In the minority, we won't be able to set the agenda, but we're hoping that we'll be able to work together in a bipartisan manner on a few issues that we campaigned on, one being education. Also, we've heard a lot from our constituents and voters across the state about wanting to fix Medicaid privatization and try and make some fixes there with Governor Reynolds planning to keep that program as it is. We still believe we need to make significant changes to that, as well as mental health care. And when we realize, or when we are not agreeing on things, Democrats, you can expect, will be loud and fierce in opposition. But I'm hoping we can have some bipartisan proposals to work on this year.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I take away from what I heard from my Republican counterparts in the House is that we seem to identify that there are common problems that we need to address, as Senator Peterson said, with health care and with education. And then as is true every year with the legislative session, the devil is really in the details. But if we can find common sense ways that restore accountability and make the Medicaid system work for Iowans, for people that that depend on the Medicaid system for their health care, which are primarily the elderly, children, people who are indigent. I mean, if we can find common sense ways to restore accountability, we're very willing to work with Republicans on that. And then with education funding, we've had, in a lot of ways, particularly in my rural district, the schools have seen a lot of cuts. And we need to reverse that trend. We need to reaffirm a commitment to K through 12, through pre-K, and to job training and the Regent universities. It's time to really kind of reestablish Iowa schools and the Iowa education system as a leader in the nation. And I think the last few years, we've gone backwards.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Medicaid issue, it's been, 3 years since the former governor, Terry Branstad, shifted Iowa's Medicaid system from a state-run system to this privately managed one. It continues to be controversial. This is a $5 billion program which provides health care for nearly 700,000 Iowans, repeatedly criticized by patients, by medical providers, even some Republicans acknowledging the problem. Do you see it as in any way on the table to bring that program back under state control or make improvements to its privatized management?
I would certainly hope so. As I listened to the governor campaign last election cycle, and as I listened to other candidates in the Republican Party, they talked about the issue, they identified the issue. Now it's the time to act. And if they want to make changes that I said, like I said earlier, that make the system accountable, that protect the interests of the people that are vested in the system, then we're going to work together with them on that.
Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. We have a little more than 10 minutes, about 15 minutes left with Representative Todd Pritchard, a Democrat, House Minority Leader in the Iowa Legislature, Senator Janet Peterson from Des Moines, Senate Minority Leader. Join our discussion with your questions for these Democrats, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Nate Bolton was a lot in the news last year. Senator Peterson, talk about this. Just a little background to make sure we're up to speed on that. He dropped out of the Democratic primary for governor in the spring after the Des Moines Register reported women accused him of sexual harassment. He stayed in the Senate. He is in the Senate. What is his status today, and what has he been assigned?
Well, the Senate Ethics Committee took action on the complaint filed against Senator Bolton, and they decided that he could remain in the Senate through their ruling. And my expectation is that he will uphold the duties of the office while he remains in the Senate. He did receive two committee assignments for this legislative session.
Mm-hmm. Are those assignments different than he would have had this sexual harassment case not happened?
Yes.
Okay, so they're lower assignments, so to speak.
Senator Bolton did not receive his requested committee assignments or a leadership position within the caucus.
Okay, let's go to our first caller, Bill in Sac City. Welcome to the program with Senator Janet Peterson and Representative Todd Pritchard. Thank you for calling.
Good. Thank you for taking my call, Ben. And, I'm on the budget committee for the city council in Sac City. Sac City is a community of approximately 2,100 people. The housing and commercial tax base is like many other rural communities in that it is not that high. Our budget is already cut to the bone, considering that we've already had a commercial property tax cut recently. We have little extra money for infrastructure improvement or any additional services. A property tax cut, as proposed by Republican Senator Jack Whitberg earlier in this program, is just going to stretch us even thinner and will lead to further degradation, I think, of small rural communities. And I'd just like Senator Peterson or Representative Pritchard just to comment on the proposed wisdom of that tax cut for property taxes.
Bill in Sac City, thank you so much for the question.
Bill brings up a great point. You know, and Sac City is similarly situated as my community and a lot of communities in my district in North Iowa with Charles City and New Hampton and some of those communities, to where if we if we change the property tax system, and we don't know yet what the Republicans are wanting to do exactly. They've just talked kind of broadly about reform, but you know, again, the devil is in the details. And what we have to avoid, and what we must protect, is that we protect the ability of these small communities like Sac City to do what they need to do for their citizens. If we put them in a box financially and put too many restrictions on them, they're not going to be able to deliver the basic services that they need to. And as a rural legislator, this is critical, because what we're struggling to do in rural Iowa, and what I'm fighting to do, is maintain rural communities as a place where people want to live and work and raise their family, as we say. And if we're hamstringing these communities, then we're not serving Iowans. And so, you know, the issue of the backfill inevitably comes up in this conversation. We simply can't put these small communities in a box where they can't provide the services they have to.
Let's move on to mental health care. Last session, quite a bit happened there. Katarina, can you remind us about mental health care changes that we had in the last session?
Sure. There was a big bipartisan mental health bill that passed last year, supported by patient advocates. I think there was just a lot of excitement around that. It created some critical access centers, teams to help people with mental illness, a crisis hotline, a lot more. And so the system is largely funded by local property taxes and by Medicaid. Right now, the regions and counties say they have enough money for a couple years, but after that, they're not sure how sustainable the current property tax funding will be for keeping those services running once they're built. And so some of the ideas that have come up are raising the cap on property taxes so counties can raise more money, mm-hmm. having the state fund the system, or a sales tax increase are some of the things that have been kicking around.
Senator Peterson, what would you hope? I think mental health care, would agree, was a bipartisan issue in the legislature last session. Where do you see the deficiencies that need debate, possible correction?
Well, funding has always been an issue, especially for Polk County and other regions around the state, trying to find a sustainable funding solution. In Polk County and other counties that have been frozen at the 1996 level, when you have growth, population growth in those counties, that gives you less resources to work with, and we're still struggling to get that addressed. Democrats are very excited in the chance to actually implement some of the policy that was passed last year on a bipartisan in a bipartisan manner, and we are looking forward to seeing whether or not the governor will make this a funding priority when she presents her budget.
And I think one thing to add too, Ben, is that, you know, as the caller from Sac City mentioned, mental health is funded primarily or in a large way through property tax. And so if we're going to do reforms to the property tax system, that's one thing that we have to make sure we're protecting, is the funding sources for mental health, which are already stretched.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A few more minutes with our Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, Representative Todd Pritchard and Senator Janet Peterson. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff in Iowa City, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to ask, when Representative Pritchard was running for governor in the Democratic primary before he dropped out, he raised an issue that has a great deal of resonance, not just locally but nationally, and that is doing something about the cost of attending our community colleges. It seems like there's a great deal of concern with access to higher education, to job retraining, to you know, going back to college to get job skills and doing something about student debt. And, in fact, Governor Reynolds has talked about this issue, too. I just wanted to ask if both our Democratic leaders, if there's any prospect of some kind of bipartisan approach to improving access to our community colleges.
Mm-hmm. Jeff in Iowa City, thank you very much. Before the response, just to throw this in, Future Ready Iowa is the name of the governor's workforce development plan. Her goal to have 70% of Iowa workers obtain training beyond high school by 2025. Comment on community colleges, education for the trades, please.
Well, once again, Future Ready Iowa was passed with large bipartisan support, but what we saw at the same time was the Republican-led legislature and governor cutting funding to community colleges. We had 3 out of 4 Iowans who applied for KIBBE grants that would help them go to community colleges be denied grants. And when you deny kids opportunities and Iowans of all ages opportunities to go to community college, you're denying them a chance to earn a bigger income. And we are very anxious to see if the governor will put some funding in her budget to help Iowans who really want an opportunity to go to college to be able to afford to do so.
It warms my heart so much to hear someone talk about the idea with the free community college that we talked about on the governor's race. So I love this question. It brings up a very good point about student debt. And student debt is something that has a very negative effect, particularly on rural communities like mine in Northeast Iowa, where the salaries aren't necessarily as high as what you might find in metro areas like Chicago or Minneapolis or even Des Moines. And so people who are looking for work sometimes are limited in where they can look because they need to have a salary or a wage that will allow them to service their debt. And a lot of times it kind of puts rural communities out of the running for attracting people to come to the community. I've seen this problem in my own business, and it's something that we have to continue to address if we want to keep people in rural Iowa, is making access to higher education affordable.
About 5 minutes left with our Democratic leaders. I wanted to get to this because of the comment by Governor Kim Reynolds telling reporters at the legislative forum last week that she wants to take a look at the current setup for nominating justices to the Iowa Supreme Court. Katerina, before we get a quick weigh-in from our lawmakers, remind us, how are they picked? Because it's a much-admired system, isn't it, for keeping partisan politics out of the mix?
It's considered a merit-based system, it's considered a good way to keep politics out of it. Right now, there's a state judicial nominating commission. It's made up of 17 people, 8 appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, and then 8 attorneys who are chosen by other attorneys. And then there's also the senior justice on the Supreme Court. They're the ones who interview applicants, and they send 3 names to the governor, and then the governor appoints the justice.
Representative Pritchard, you first. What do you feel about the talk among the Republicans about looking at this process, perhaps revamping it, changing it in some way?
I think any change to the system would really be a big mistake if it inserts politics into the system. This is one of those things. I don't see what the problem is. I mean, Iowa has got a system that really is a model for states around the country. And, I guess if there's things that can be improved upon, well, we're always for that. But I don't see this as something that needs to be improved upon. I think this is it's a solution in search of a problem. I practice law myself. I've got friends that practice in other states. And we don't want a system where judges are selected through politics. We want them selected through merit. And we have that system.
Quickly before we go, the governor has also left open the possibility of automatic restoration of felon voting rights. We have several other states, Florida, for example, that does that, did that recently, that change. Would you support, would the Democrats support that effort as part of a larger criminal justice reform bill?
Well, I believe that Democrats are looking for opportunities to expand voting rights in our state. We're coming up on the 100th anniversary of when women received the right to vote. So we'd like to take a close look at that, as well as automatic voter registration for our teenagers, getting their driver's license to hunters, anglers, new citizens, and taxpayers. So we're hoping that the entire legislature will look at expanding all types of voter rights.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, the opioid crisis across the country and here in Iowa. We've had needle exchanges, Katerina, as a topic in the past sessions. Tell us briefly about that, and we'll get a comment from our Democratic leaders.
That's something that there are Republicans and Democrats who feel that's something that was left out of last year's legislation to address the opioid epidemic, and syringe exchange programs are, there's research that shows they help stop the spread of disease among people who use drugs, and they can be a point of entry for people into drug treatment. And that measure, even though it was championed by a lot of Republicans in the Senate, it was never brought up for a floor vote.
Mm-hmm. Needle exchanges operate under the radar, so to speak, currently. What do you think about that? Is there unanimity among Democrats, Representative Pritchard, that needle exchanges should be lawful?
I don't know if there's unanimity, but I think there's a broad consensus among Democrats that there's something that needs to be done. And I think this is kind of a common sense way to help people who are dealing with addiction. I think this is something that last year when it was discussed quite heavily in committees that did see some bipartisan support. We're all going to agree we need to do more to address addiction. I would hope that we can take some positive steps to deal with this issue. It really is at an epidemic level, and we need to realize that people's lives are at stake here and make some necessary changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming into the State House Law Library. Representative Todd Pritchard, Democrat from Charles City, House Minority Leader. Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat from Des Moines, the Senate Minority Leader. Many issues we didn't get to. We want to thank our callers for bringing up several issues, but I'm sure we'll be in conversation throughout the session. Representative Pritchard, Senator Peterson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Katerina, thank you so much for helping me host today's program. I'm looking forward to next Monday's Legislative Monday.
Thanks, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to remember Iowans we lost in 2018. Included in that, Iowa's longest-serving state Supreme Court justice. Also, syndicated columnist and RAGBRAI co-founder Donald Call. We'll talk about his life and how he co-founded RAGBRAI when we talk tomorrow on this program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The very first day of the 2019 Iowa legislative session. With me is Iowa State House reporter Katerina Sestarek at the State House Law Library. In our first half hour, we talked with Republican leaders. Republicans, after the November elections, maintain their majorities in both the House and the Senate. Also, a full four-year term for Governor Kim Reynolds. This half hour, we have the Democrats. Representative Todd Pritchard joins us, a Democrat from Charles City, House Minority Leader. Also, Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat from Des Moines, the Senate Minority Leader. Welcome to our lawmakers. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Katerina, we talked about gun rights. That was in the news this weekend. I think you wanted to follow up with our Democrats here to ask them about that.
Yes. So Republicans say they're disappointed because the Republican Secretary of State has failed to notify the public about some potential constitutional amendments, one related to gun rights. So they're pretty convinced that this sets the process back. They'll have to have the amendment pass two general assemblies again and then have it go to the voters. Now it's looking like it won't be until 2022. So first, I'm curious, what's your reaction to that issue?
Well, it was surprising news to hear, and I do believe they're right. This will set them back. We need to follow the law, and so they'll have to consider how to move forward and if they have the support to do so.
And the Republican leaders we had on in the first half of the show said that, maybe there's an issue with the fact that the Secretary of State, that process has to go through him, and he even kind of has the ability for the process to stop with him. And they suggested that maybe the process for adding constitutional amendments should be changed. What do you think of that?
I'm not one for throwing out the baby with the bathwater. I mean, this obviously comes as a surprise to, I think, all of us that, this is kind of a technicality, I guess. But to kind of wholesale say we've got to relook at this whole system, I think, is kind of a knee-jerk reaction. It's too soon to do anything like that. You know, and speaking generally about the gun issue, I mean, one thing I think that needs to be clear in this discussion is that the amendment that they are proposing, it goes far beyond the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment. I think you could find a lot of bipartisan support. I mean, Democrats have already taken a vote on that last year, or, you know, last time this came up in the last session. And this isn't that. I mean, this is a measure that would endanger things like background checks and what I think people would consider very common sense issues. So there's a bigger picture here that I think is important and a narrative that needs to be discussed. I mean, this isn't, as I like to say, this isn't your dad's Second Amendment proposal that they're trying to pass here.
In the first half hour, we got to about a half dozen of the GOP's agenda items for this session. Todd Pritchard and Janet Peterson, I'm sure you're well acquainted with what the Republicans in the majority in both the House and Senate have as far as their priorities. What's your reaction to that? Give us a sense, perhaps Senator Peterson, start off of what you will be doing as a minority party since you do not set the agenda.
Well, that's right. In the minority, we won't be able to set the agenda, but we're hoping that we'll be able to work together in a bipartisan manner on a few issues that we campaigned on, one being education. Also, we've heard a lot from our constituents and voters across the state about wanting to fix Medicaid privatization and try and make some fixes there, with Governor Reynolds planning to keep that program as it is. We still believe we need to make significant changes to that, as well as mental health care. And when we realize, or when we are not agreeing on things, Democrats, you can expect, will be loud and fierce in opposition. But I'm hoping we can have some bipartisan proposals to work on this year.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that I take away from what I heard from my Republican counterparts in the House is that we seem to identify that there are common problems that we need to address, as Senator Peterson said, with health care and with education. And then as is true every year with the legislative session, the devil is really in the details. But if we can find common sense ways that restore accountability and make the Medicaid system work for Iowans, for people that that depend on the Medicaid system for their health care, which are primarily the elderly, children, people who are indigent, I mean, if we can find common sense ways to restore accountability, we're very willing to work with Republicans on that. And then with education funding, we've had, in a lot of ways, particularly in my rural district, the schools have seen a lot of cuts. And we need to reverse that trend. We need to reaffirm commitment to K through 12, through pre-K, and to job training and the Regent universities. It's time to really kind of reestablish Iowa schools and the Iowa education system as a leader in the nation. And I think the last few years, we've gone backwards.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Medicaid issue, it's been, 3 years since the former governor, Terry Branstad, shifted Iowa's Medicaid system from a state-run system to this privately managed one. It continues to be controversial. This is a $5 billion program which provides health care for nearly 700,000 Iowans, repeatedly criticized by patients, by medical providers, even some Republicans acknowledging the problem. Do you see it as in any way on the table to bring that program back under state control or make improvements to its privatized management?
I would certainly hope so. As I listened to the governor campaign last election cycle, as I listened to other candidates in the Republican Party, they talked about the issue, they identified the issue. Now's the time to act. And if they want to make changes that I said, you know, like I said earlier, that make the system accountable, that protect the interests of the people that are vested in the system, then we're going to work together with them on that.
Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. We have a little more than 10 minutes, about 15 minutes left with Representative Todd Pritchard, a Democrat, a House Minority Leader in the Iowa Legislature, Senator Janet Peterson from Des Moines, Senate Minority Leader. Join our discussion with your questions for these Democrats. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Nate Bolton was a lot in the news last year. Senator Peterson, talk about this. Just a little background to make sure we're up to speed on that. He dropped out of the Democratic primary for governor in the spring after the Des Moines Register reported women accused him of sexual harassment. He stayed in the Senate. He is in the Senate. What is his status today, and what has he been assigned?
Well, the Senate Ethics Committee took action on the complaint filed against Senator Bolton, and they decided that he could remain in the Senate through their ruling. And my expectation is that he will uphold the duties of the office while he remains in the Senate. He did receive two committee assignments for this legislative session.
Mm-hmm. Are those assignments different than he would have had this sexual harassment case not happened?
Yes.
Okay, so they're lower assignments, so to speak.
Senator Bolton did not receive his requested committee assignments or a leadership position within the caucus.
Okay, let's go to our first caller, Bill in Sac City. Welcome to the program with Senator Janet Peterson and Representative Todd Pritchard. Thank you for calling.
Good. Thank you for taking my call, Ben. And, I'm on the budget committee for the city council in Sac City. Sac City is a community of approximately 2,100 people. The housing and commercial tax base is like many other rural communities in that it is not that high. Our budget is already cut to the bone, considering that we've already had a commercial property tax cut recently. We have little extra money for infrastructure improvement or any additional services. A property tax cut, as proposed by Republican Senator Jack Whitberg earlier in this program, is just going to stretch us even thinner and will lead to further degradation, I think, of small rural communities. And I'd just like Senator Peterson or Representative Pritchard just to comment on the proposed wisdom of that tax cut for property taxes.
Bill in Sac City, thank you so much for the question.
Bill brings up a great point. You know, in Sac City is similarly situated as my community and in a lot of communities in my district in North Iowa with Charles City and New Hampton and some of those communities, to where if we change the property tax system, and we don't know yet what the Republicans are wanting to do exactly. They've just talked kind of broadly about reform. But, you know, the devil is in the details. And what we have to avoid and what we must protect is that we protect the ability of these small communities like Sac City to do what they need to do for their citizens. If we put them in a box financially and put too many restrictions on them, they're not going to be able to deliver the basic services that they need to. And as a rural legislator, this is critical, because what we're struggling to do in rural Iowa, and what I'm fighting to do, is maintain rural communities as a place where people want to live and work and raise their family, as we say. And if we're hamstringing these communities, then we're not serving Iowans. And so, you know, the issue of the backfill and inevitably comes up in this conversation. We simply can't put these small communities in a box where they can't provide the services they have to.
Let's move on to mental health care. Last session, quite a bit happened there. Katarina, can you remind us about mental health care changes that we had in the last session?
Sure. There was a big bipartisan mental health bill that passed last year, supported by patient advocates. I think there was just a lot of excitement around that. It created some critical access centers, teams to help people with mental illness, a crisis hotline, a lot more. And so the system is largely funded by local property taxes and by Medicaid. Right now, the regions and counties say they have enough money for a couple years, but after that, they're not sure how sustainable the current property tax funding will be for keeping those services running once they're built. And so some of the ideas that have come up are raising the cap on property taxes so counties can raise more money, mm-hmm. having the state fund the system, or a sales tax increase are some of the things that have been kicking around.
Senator Peterson, what would you hope? I think mental health care, would agree, was a bipartisan issue in the legislature last session. Where do you see the deficiencies that need debate, possible correction?
Well, funding has always been an issue, especially for Polk County and other regions around the state, trying to find a sustainable funding solution. In Polk County and other counties that have been frozen at the 1996 level, when you have growth, population growth in those counties, that gives you less resources to work with, and we're still struggling to get that addressed. Democrats are very excited in the chance to actually implement some of the policy that was passed last year on a bipartisan in a bipartisan manner, and we are looking forward to seeing whether or not the governor will make this a funding priority when she presents her budget.
And I think one thing to add too, Ben, is that, you know, as the caller from Sac City mentioned, mental health is funded primarily or in a large way through property tax, and so if we're going to do reforms to the property tax system, that's one thing that we have to make sure we're protecting is the funding sources for mental health, which are already stretched.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A few more minutes with our Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, Representative Todd Pritchard and Senator Janet Peterson. Let's go back to the phones. Jeff in Iowa City, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello.
Hi. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to ask, when Representative Pritchard was running for governor in the Democratic primary before he dropped out, he raised an issue that has a great deal of resonance, not just locally, but nationally, and that is doing something about the cost of attending our community colleges. It seems like there's a great deal of concern with access to higher education, to job retraining, to going back to college to get job skills and doing something about student debt. And in fact, Governor Reynolds has talked about this issue too. I just wanted to ask if both our Democratic leaders, if there's any prospect of some kind of bipartisan approach to improving access to our community colleges.
Mm-hmm. Jeff in Iowa City, thank you very much. Before the response, just to throw this in, Future Ready Iowa is the name of the governor's workforce development plan. Her goal to have 70% of Iowa workers obtain training beyond high school by 2025. Comment on community colleges, education for the trades, please.
Well, once again, Future Ready Iowa was passed with large bipartisan support, but what we saw at the same time was the Republican-led legislature and governor cutting funding to community colleges. We had 3 out of 4 Iowans who applied for KIBBE grants that would help them go to community colleges be denied grants. And when you deny kids opportunities and Iowans of all ages opportunities to go to community college, you're denying them the chance to earn a bigger income. And we are very anxious to see if the governor will put some funding in her budget to help Iowans who really want an opportunity to go to college to be able to afford to do so.
It warms my heart so much to hear someone talk about the idea with the free community college that we talked about on the governor's race. So I love this question. It brings up a very good point about student debt. And student debt is something that it has a very negative effect, particularly on rural communities like mine in Northeast Iowa, where the salaries aren't necessarily as high as what you might find in metro areas like Chicago or Minneapolis or even Des Moines. And so people who are looking for work sometimes are limited in where they can look because they need to have a salary or a wage that will allow them to service their debt. And a lot of times it kind of puts rural communities out of the running for attracting people to come to the community. I've seen this problem in my own business, and it's something that, you know, we have to continue to address if we want to keep people in rural Iowa, is making access to higher education affordable.
About 5 minutes left with our Democratic leaders. I wanted to get to this because of the comment by Governor Kim Reynolds telling reporters at the legislative forum last week that she wants to take a look at the current setup for nominating justices to the Iowa Supreme Court. Katerina, before we get a quick weigh-in from our lawmakers, remind us, how are they picked? Because it's a much-admired system, isn't it, for keeping partisan politics out of the mix?
It's considered a merit-based system, and yeah, it's considered a good way to keep politics out of it. Right now, there's a state judicial nominating commission. It's made up of 17 people, 8 appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, and then 8 attorneys who are chosen by other attorneys. And then there's also the senior justice on the Supreme Court. They're the ones who interview applicants, and they send 3 names to the governor, and then the governor appoints the justice.
Representative Pritchard, you first. What do you feel about the talk among the Republicans about looking at this process, perhaps revamping it, changing it in some way?
I think any change to the system would really be a big mistake if it inserts politics into the system. This is one of those things. I don't see what the problem is. I mean, Iowa has got a system that really is a model for states around the country. And, you know, I guess if there's things that can be improved upon, well, we're always for that. But I don't see this as something that needs to be improved upon. I think this is as we say, it's a solution in search of a problem. I practice law myself. I've got friends that practice in other states, and we don't want a system where judges are selected through politics. We want them selected through merit, and we have that system.
Quickly before we go, the governor has also left open the possibility of automatic restoration of felon voting rights. We have several other states, Florida, for example, that does that, did that recently, that change. Would the Democrats support that effort as part of a larger criminal justice reform bill?
Well, I believe that Democrats are looking for opportunities to expand voting rights in our state. We're coming up on the 100th anniversary of when women received the right to vote. So we'd like to take a close look at that, as well as automatic voter registration for our teenagers, getting their driver's license to hunters, anglers, new citizens, and taxpayers. So we're hoping that the entire legislature will look at expanding all types of voter rights.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, the opioid crisis across the country and here in Iowa. We've had needle exchanges, Katerina, as a topic in the past sessions. Tell us briefly about that, and we'll get a comment from our Democratic leaders.
That's something that there are Republicans and Democrats who feel that's something that was left out of last year's legislation to address the opioid epidemic. And syringe exchange programs are, there's research that shows they help stop the spread of disease among people who use drugs, and they can be a point of entry for people into drug treatment. And that measure, even though it was championed by a lot of Republicans in the Senate, it was never brought up for a floor vote.
Mm-hmm. Needle exchanges operate under the radar, so to speak, currently. What do you think about that? Is there unanimity among Democrats, Representative Pritchard, that needle exchanges should be lawful?
I don't know if there's unanimity, but I think there's a broad consensus among Democrats that there's something that needs to be done. And I think this is kind of a common sense way to help people who are dealing with addiction. I think this is something that last year, when it was discussed quite heavily in committees, that did see some bipartisan support. We're all going to agree we need to do more to address addiction. I would hope that we can take some positive steps to deal with this issue. It really is at an epidemic level, and we need to realize that people's lives are at stake here, and make some necessary changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming into the State House Law Library. Representative Todd Pritchard, Democrat from Charles City, House Minority Leader. Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat from Des Moines, the Senate Minority Leader. Many issues we didn't get to. We want to thank our callers for bringing up several issues, but I'm sure we'll be in conversation throughout the session. Representative Pritchard, Senator Peterson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Katerina, thank you so much for helping me host today's program. I'm looking forward to next Monday's Legislative Monday.
Thanks, Ben.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to remember Iowans we lost in 2018. Included in that, Iowa's longest-serving state Supreme Court justice. Also, syndicated columnist and RAGBRAI co-founder Donald Call. We'll talk about his life and how he co-founded RAGBRAI when we talk tomorrow on this program. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.